Welcome to the Ferris Love Podcast, where we share spiritual and practical ideas for how to live family life with a beautiful, self-sacrificing love. In this very special episode of the podcast, we are highlighting a beautiful story about hope and healing through the intercession of Mary, mother of Ferris Love. Laurel Johnson shares how, through a devotion to Mary, her granddaughter found miraculous healing. Laurel, thank you for joining us on the Ferris Love Podcast for this very special episode.
Oh, thanks for having me. I love talking about this topic.
Yes, and this is a very beautiful topic, and we're really looking forward to you sharing this devotion that you have to Mary, Mother of Ferris Love, and a little bit about your background. So could you go in and explain to us a little bit about you, your family, and then kind of how this whole thing began?
Right. I think the place to start is with the birth of my granddaughter. Her name is Maddie Mae Kazmierski, and it's daughter, my fifth or sixth grandchild, and they live in Austin, Texas. And we were going to call her Jenny Mae, named for our very beloved South Carolinian aunt. And instead, my daughter, her mother, held this baby straight from the womb after an emergency cesarean, and said she just never stopped yelling. So she looks so angry. We're going to call her Maddie Mae. Oh. She thought it was really funny. But there had been concern because just the day before, Maddie stopped moving in the womb. Mm-hmm. And my daughter noticed it. And we just spoke. And I said, call your doctor. And first thing in the morning, if she's still not moving, and she called the doctor. The doctor said, come right in. And she came in. And in minutes, only minutes, she was in a cesarean having Maddie born. So we knew there was something going on, but they couldn't figure out what it was, except that she had a lot of platelets in her bloodstream. So little by little, as we were taking care of her, we noticed that she wasn't really engaging her right side the way she was engaging her left side. And at 6 months, when she was old enough to be anesthetized, they did an fMRI, and she had had a stroke that day that she stopped moving, which is an unfortunate time to have a stroke for a baby in terms of the brain is going to be affected and the rest of the brain that's still developing can't take over for it. And over time, they realized about a third of her brain was missing on the left side, which is why she couldn't use her right hand. And but perhaps because she was Maddie Mae, she was a very determined baby. But she was a real challenge. She became more and more of a challenge. She became angry all the time. It was very hard to get on her right side. She refused after a few years to even be demonstrative and hug her older sister. In fact, 1 year for Christmas, her older sister asked baby Jesus that her sister would hug her again. And it was very, very challenging. So I get this phone call now about, well, just about exactly 2 years ago. And my daughter says, Mom, I'm expecting again. And I said, oh my goodness, just like that, you know, kind of knowing she had a lot of challenges already, but you know, it's a child, right? Mm-hmm. She goes, Mom, I couldn't even talk to the doctor. I just said, I'll come back later. So I'm like, well, I had just not long ago heard about this shrine that they're building to our Mother of Ferris Love in California. And I thought, they told me that it's not easy to have a shrine when you don't have miracles that go with the shrine. You look at Fatima, look at Lourdes. And I thought, I have a miracle. I need a miracle. I need this baby to be born well and healthy. I need my daughter's mental strength to hold out. I need a miracle, but it never dawned on me that we would get a nearly complete cure for my granddaughter. It just never dawned on me to ask for something so big. I already had plenty to ask for, and my granddaughter was alive. She was deeply loved, but she was getting really, really hard. And you know, the way I found about the shrine was from Father Luke Mata. And I don't know if he's still involved with the shrine, but he came to Houston and he gave a talk, and it was sort of the history of the Virgin Mary's life in the church. Mm-hmm. You know, I grew up loving Our Lady. You know, I grew up in a Polish Catholic family. I mean, American, but you know, and I remember long before you were born that the millennium, 1,000 years of Polish being a Catholic country, the celebration was held in Chicago. Because at that time, there were more Polish people in Chicago than there were in Warsaw, in the capital. You know, it's just a very vibrant Polish community. It still is. It's very fun to go back and see how it's grown and so many Polish immigrants, and they add so much. So I learned all these songs to sing at the centenary in Soldiers Field, which is this huge football field, to the Blessed Virgin Mary. And I thought I really loved Our Lady, right? And I'd heard so much about her all through all my life. But after Father Luke's talk, I thought, I'm just beginning to love Our Lady, you know, and it was such a, I just remember being profoundly impacted by his talk and how much harder I had to try to love Our Lady, to say her rosary better. So when, I mean, my brain didn't say, oh, what a tragedy. It was like, please, Mother, help me. We have to get through this. So all of a sudden things started happening. Mm-hmm. It was the strangest thing, but my daughter posted Maddie's progress and how things were going online. And suddenly a long distant friend from high school wrote her back and said, I work with the greatest neurosurgeon in the world for what your daughter has. And at the same day, the grandfather of Maddie Mae, who's a doctor, had been researching, how do you handle what's going on? Because what was going on was that Maddie was having seizures. Mm. And now she was suddenly falling down anywhere. She could have hit her head. She could have, you know, been mortally wounded by a seizure because you didn't know when they were going to happen. Mm. And it turns out the reason for that is when a little one, like her brain is missing parts, the other parts of the brain say, oh, I have something to store, or a memory or a learning pattern or anything. And they send it to that part of the brain that's not answering because it's gone. She has a little like black space in her head where that part of the brain should be. Mm. And so it goes somewhere else. And then that one says, wait, I don't have it. I'm going to send out 10 more messages and see if somebody can find where this belongs. And then that one sends out, each of those sends out 10, and you've got hundreds and then thousands. And then a seizure, the brain just shuts down. It says, too many messages, can't handle it. And so she was doing that. But her grandfather found out that if a surgery were done, and this is a form of epilepsy on epileptic people, just to take the brain and cut it in half, mm-hmm. and to cut every single connection between left and right side, so you couldn't get this huge cascade going on, that's what she needed. Mm-hmm. And that surgeon is the surgeon whose colleague was contacting my daughter. There are only two people in the world who have like complete success rate for doing it. He was one of them.
Wow.
Yeah. So then things started going to fast motion. And I was there holding the newborn. By that time he was born. Mm. He was perfect. He's still perfect. It's just like, you know, we've never had a sweet grandchild until him.
God figured you know, a little bit of sweetness, you know.
Oh my goodness. And sleeps a lot and likes what you do. Started talking early so he could understand you and help him. And oh my gosh, it's just so fun and such a gift, right? Right about the time I was holding him, I remember this Dr. Weiner, is his name. He called my daughter and I was, you know, eavesdropping a little bit. And I heard my daughter at one point in the conversation go, oh, well, we're doing okay, really. You know, the baby is settling well. And, really? And then what he was saying was, we want you to come to Houston Medical Center, and that's where I will do the surgery. Mm-hmm. If after we do all this testing to see if she's a good candidate. But if we choose times that are not good for you, just call me personally, and I will rearrange my schedule for you. So he did everything possible. And what they found, they did some EEGs and they were going to do them for 2 or 3 days. Mm-hmm. After 1 hour, they took all the equipment off and they said, she is having so many seizures per minute. That's why she can't cooperate with you very much. In fact, it's a miracle that she cooperate with you. In fact, we don't understand why she's talking because her language center is missing. What's going on here? We don't know, but the surgery is the only thing that we can recommend because she cannot possibly have a normal life with this many seizures every minute. Mm-hmm. So they're micro seizures, the ones that made her fall down. There were 3 or 4 a day. Plus she was taking medication that completely destroyed her appetite. So she hadn't gained weight in about a year and a half, mm-hmm. which is
how old was she at this time?
She said she was 4. So she was, you know, many pounds underweight. Yeah. So Timmy was born. So we made all the arrangements and a lot of family came. And we had the surgery, and she hasn't had a seizure since that surgery.
Wow.
Not only that, but the personnel could not get over the change in her. She became this child who, every time you did something for her, she said, thank you. I mean, all the nurses, all the therapists are like, what? You're always saying thank you when she goes to the visits, the post-op visits. Mm-hmm. She just has everybody laughing in stitches because she's just so joyful and so relieved. One of the good things actually about having missed part of a brain, and this is the part that you never know what's going to happen, mm-hmm. is after surgery, there's a lot of swelling.
Yeah.
But because she had all this space in her skull, the swelling could go there. So she didn't lose any of her speech. She didn't lose any of her vision. They think that they actually cut every single fiber between the left and the right side of the brain, and that they didn't miss one. And this doctor was so dedicated that just before her surgery, he went to Panama and he did 9 of the same surgeries pro bono for people who couldn't pay, to make sure he was on his game. So so the fact that she changed so much, and she just got along so well all of a sudden with everybody, the hospital said, well, we're opening up a new branch and we want you to be our poster child. Which really helped, because she stayed with me in Houston post-op, and well, she spent a week in the hospital. I mean, it's huge trauma to have your head cut into. And so her first visit back to the hospital, she didn't want to go.
Yeah,
she was all fine until she got there. And she's like, ah, right. Dramatic, right? But because they started making commercials with her, putting her in advertisements. I have one right here to show you. Maddie's fairy tale is just beginning.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's true. It's like, pinch me. I can't believe this. I just asked you for a healthy baby and fortitude. But what I did do, I mean, you know, it's my daughter. I mean, what wouldn't you do for your daughter, right? Is every time I saw somebody that I knew fairly well or a little well, or even like, I help out at Feather Rock Conference Center, and it's a lot like the conference center that they're trying to build in California. And I will tell you, this place is life-changing. I mean, I could do a whole nother history of Feather Rock, because when my husband and I arrived in Houston, we didn't have Feather Rock. We were and we were trying to have our retreats and workshops in hotels, you know, and it's just, so people would come to Feather Rock on a retreat, and sometimes they would like to talk to somebody to be spiritually accompanied, and they would come to me and say, can we talk? And I'd say, sure. Now here's this prayer card, because the prayer to Mother Fairest Love is, it covers everything. No matter what this person was concerned about, there was a line in that prayer. I know it's a long prayer, and but it just takes exactly as long as it does to brush my teeth, to say it, right? As I read it on the mirror while I'm brushing. It's so beautiful. I think, and most mornings I begin with that prayer, even later on after I brush my teeth, slowly, because everybody I love and care about, everything that the Holy Father is asking us to pray for is included in this prayer card. And so many people ask me for prayers. And I know that between that and taking all those people to Mass, it's making a huge difference. And so many of them have told me things that get favors they have received through the intercession of Mother of Fairest Love. Mm-hmm. And it's very much a family shrine, and we had very much a family situation. And but that wish that my granddaughter had, that at Christmas her sister would hug her, definitely came true. I mean, it was, the surgery was in June, and she was hugging as soon as her sore was over and she could hug. And it hasn't changed. It's been, it's the gift that keeps on giving. You know, not only is it great for family unity and for bringing people back to their faith and to really trusting God, but also more things keep happening to her. All right. So being weak on the right side, she was spastic and couldn't walk she just hopped around kind of on one foot with the other foot, the right foot, just little toe on the ground, like a little pig, you know. But after all that other surgery and her brain just clearing out and her ability to really understand finally what therapy was about and all of that, they were able to do a further surgery on her right leg, and she walks heel toe on her right foot too. Wow. Who would have guessed?
Yeah. And do you ever, I mean, you mentioned that she's in advertisements now with this cancer and all these things, but have you noticed kind of how your devotion to the title of Mary, Mother, First Love, as you mentioned, how it changes lives, not just Maddie's, but also, you know, the people that you're in contact with. Have you heard of anyone else who's just been very heavily influenced by that miracle from Maddie? And
yes, dozens of people, dozens and dozens. You know, it's, for me, it's been a way to even talk to my neighbors who are not Catholic, mm-hmm. but believe in God, mm-hmm. and not even that much in a Christian God, but sort of. Mm-hmm. And they use the word miracle. And it's been a really good way for me to bond with neighbors that I'm trying to get to know, because I moved back to Houston recently, to ask them to pray for this, because everybody wants to pray for a little girl. But then also, many of the people to whom I've given this prayer, and I pray with them, every day I pray in my heart with them. It's given them, I mean, there have been lots of results. Let's put it that way. And maybe nothing as astounding as a cure, but a lot of healing of relationships. And that's what I'm seeing more of. You know, I read a statistic that 27% of American adults do not talk to either parent. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's okay now to just be mad at somebody for the rest of your life and forget that you are family. You know, I mean, we have so much work to do here. And so many of my friends who've gotten small favors, miracles, have been because two of their children were not talking to each other. Mm. Or I have a few whose children don't talk to one or both parents. And but then also a lot of like really tricky births. And of course, whenever I pray, even to any saint, like today, Saint Therese, but I always say, you know, I know you're going to Our Lady with this, you know, so because even I say the prayer to St. Jose Maria I have since my grandmother's hearing got cured in 1980. It goes through the intercession of the Mother of God. Granted, this priest, graces. Of course, we're always going to Our Lady, right? But many times it's been once they started praying to Our Mother of Fairest Love that things have really started moving and, you know, communication lines got opened again. And also, I do think she opens our hearts to have these conversations so that we can support each other, so we can accompany each other on our walks, because so many of us have, I mean, if your family doesn't make you worry, you're really lucky. Anybody who gets out of it without, you know, something, and sometimes even more serious than physical illnesses, like, you know, not believing in God anymore, not going to the sacraments, you know, so many temptations, especially, you know, in addictions, right? And yeah, I do have friends who've told me things. I guess I should be having them also write in and say, look, you know, I mean, I know you're praying to everybody, but why don't you do this? Because it really started taking off when you and I were going to Mother of Fairest Love. And I mean, the idea of a shrine to her in the United States makes perfect sense to me. We need it so badly. You know, the family is under attack. Well, you know, it always has been. I mean, you know, even in the 11th century, they were having shrines to the Holy Family because the family was, you know, especially with feudalism, just being destroyed. So it'll always be the devil's favorite place to attack, right? Mothers and families. And so we have a big job ahead of us. I just feel like this is the cure-all. I mean, I think Our Lady's always the cure-all. I was at a prayer group in my parish recently, just last week, and every woman at the table, unbeknownst to me, people I've never met before, when we talked about when things get really hard, they're like, well, you have to say the rosary. You have to go to the Mother of God. You have to put everything in Our Mother's hands. That's the only thing. That's the only thing. I'm like, whoa, you come from so many different backgrounds. And every one of them, I was like, I thought I was the only one, because certainly when I was in college in the 70s, even the chaplain at our university ordered the removal of the statue of the Blessed Virgin Mary. It was not cool. It was not ecumenical. It was, you know, but I remember talking to a friend of mine. He's not Catholic. He's very, very deeply born again. And he asked me about it. And I said, well, every family needs a mother. And he goes, you're right. Just like that. You know, I mean, it doesn't take much. I think there's so much grace there. Because it's true. Every family needs a mother. And every mother needs a mother. And every grandmother needs a mother. Let me tell you, I don't know what I would have done if I couldn't have controlled my imagination by just pouring out my heart to the Mother of God, you know. And like I said, that prayer is great because I didn't feel selfish, like this is just for me. I felt like this is for the whole world, you know.
I love how you mentioned earlier, just with Father Luke giving you kind of that talk, that was initially how you heard about the title for Mary, Mother of First Love.
Yes.
I love how you said, you know, you loved Mary before that, but then you just realized like how much more you can love her and get to know her even after hearing that. What would you like if you had to say, let's say parents are struggling with different aspects in their family life, or how would you recommend building that love for Our Lady again? Let's say if you're not familiar with it, if you're new to it, or if, let's say, like for your case, you've loved her all your life and you're finding again, you know, like a deeper love for her.
That's a really good question. I've even had women say to me, you know, I grew up Protestant and I've just been taught that we don't worship Mary and we don't worship Mary and we don't worship Mary. And if we pray to her, we're worshiping her. And it's like, well, a couple of things. First of all, do you ask your mother to pray for things? Your mother on earth? And they're like, well, yeah. I said, well, she's only God's mother. She's not God, right? But, you know, are you comfortable with asking anybody else to pray for you? Why wouldn't you ask her? Since, you know, she's his first and his best disciple. And that helps a lot. Also, for some of my friends, I married somebody who was raised Baptist. And he became Catholic before we met. And he knew the Blessed Virgin Mary was a challenge. And he didn't know me. He didn't know any Catholics. He just read Cardinal Newman. And he's like, this is, you know, if I die and don't become Catholic, Jesus is going to say to me, why didn't you become Catholic? And he was going to have to say, I don't have a good reason. So what he did was he got a very small wooden image of Our Lady and said, you know, I have to get to know you. And, you know, I'm open. And then it just grew. It just grew so quickly for him to read about her in the Bible, right? The different times in the Bible she's mentioned, and to see with new vision how she was the best disciple of Christ. She just was. Also, Hail Holy Queen, the book written by Scott Hahn. There's so many biblical references, and it's really fun because he's kind of like, oh, I didn't know that. And really? And oh my gosh, that's amazing. And so he's got this, you know, really wonderful freshness to devotion, Charlie, because he didn't get it at first either, but being such a lover of the Bible. Yeah, he was. So I think those are all ways that can help people grow closer to Our Lady. But I think for many people, it's the sense of peace that comes when we go to the Mother of God. It's like the first thing she does, just like a child goes to the mother for her arms to go around her and just say, there, it's going to be okay. That is, to me, almost the instant result of going to Our Lady. And so it's kind of like, give it a try, see what you think. But it's difficult. I mean, some people have incredible prejudices that they can't help, right? They've been ingrained in them. And I certainly learned that through my husband's experiences. A lot of anti-Catholic things were said in his childhood, that he had to process each one, kind of. And it took time, but in grace. I mean, but that's the beauty of it. She, grace is there, you know, and she's kind of like the shortcut, I think. When we start going to her, I think for my husband especially, the grace of his conversion went very quickly mm-hmm. after he started going to the Mother of God.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Wow. And she's patient too, right? She's patient with us. She'll look around until you go ahead and ask.
Yeah. You know, the more I live my life as a mother and grandmother, the more I understand how you just never give up on somebody you love, ever, no matter what they do, no matter what they say. It's like, you can't, it's not in you to give up on them, you know, or even to be, well, for me, I can't even be annoyed for very long because, you know, it's just not, you know, it's a journey you take with each person. And she journeys with all of us.
Yeah. And your granddaughter, how old is she now?
She's 5. And you know what? They decided she could go to regular kindergarten.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So she's not in special ed anything. She can't really use her right hand. It's kind of like a little, the way it was described to me is, imagine you had a hot mitt on your hand and you had to use it. You know, so she's just getting to the point where she can use it to hold a paper down while she writes with her other hand. And but she seems to be naturally left-handed.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
That's
so,
nice.
Well, it turns out both grandfathers are left-handed. Great-grandfathers, excuse me. So, yeah, it runs in the family. And several of her uncles. So, yeah, that to me, is, for a lot of people, that's when they go, oh, you really got a miracle.
Right. Well, and I'm just not knowing a lot about, I mean, I'm not a biology major, or I don't know the anatomy like a professional would, but the fact that a part of her brain is still missing, correct?
It cannot grow back. No.
So, but even with that, I mean, you said she was in special education for a little bit of time?
Well, she was so oppositional that, the only place that could handle her was a place that was full-time keeping her from,
yeah.
I mean, my only grandchild who hit a classmate over the head with a toy.
Oh, and now, like, that's the miracle too. And now she can go back to, you know, she can go to class.
Yeah. And she actually is, because she's so outgoing, and because she is very verbal, which again has no real explanation in terms of, you know, her brain did get to wire someplace for all of that,
right.
Someplace else. She is pretty much the Miss Congeniality of the class. I'm like, what?
Wow.
So right. Yeah, I mean it was all there, you know. She just couldn't express it because she would be interrupted by all these little micro seizures. Mm-hmm. And so whatever she was thinking about, or whatever somebody asked her to do, it's like, mm-hmm. I'm not going there right now. I just not going there. Which came across as very oppositional.
Mm-hmm. And now does she know like what happened and how can she verbalize and express how like she feels differently now
That's a great question. Well, she likes food now.
Okay.
She really likes food.
Good,
she's
yes.
all the way back. I think, like I mentioned, by having, she was at a ribbon cutting ceremony and she was like mm-hmm. the guest of honor.
Oh.
And they filled the green room with all her favorite foods.
Oh.
Sweet. And, you know, so like the terror, the fear, all of that prehistory
mm-hmm.
Is gone. And I think along with it went a lot of remembering things that she said or did, because as you may, well, you don't know. So if you were a biology major, you would know that we don't really lay down very many memories mm-hmm. of events until we're about 5 years old. Mm-hmm. We'll have a few events in our mind. You know, what's your youngest memory? 5 years, you probably have a lot of memories. 4 years, some, 3, fewer, 2, almost none, right? Yeah. And it's very hard to know what is the story everybody in the family told about you compared to what you really remember.
Right.
So in a way, it was a blessing to have it done so soon, because she doesn't have any trauma about the past, which is what I would be concerned about, right? And then having, I was with them recently, she goes, these are the pajamas I wore in the commercial.
Oh,
like, isn't this fun? Not like bragging. She's so unaffected. I don't get that. I mean, I would be so stuck up.
Oh.
All the attention she's getting. And her older sister is not even an iota jealous. Not even an iota. Once again,
a lot of graces.
A lot of grace. A lot of grace. You know, and the family is, unapologetically Catholic. Mm. You know, so I think a lot of people have received more faith by seeing it lived by this family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm sure of it.
And her testament to joy too. Like if you're saying that she's just kind of, you know, bubbly and everything, I think that's very powerful in itself.
Yeah.
To experience that.
Yeah. It is. It is. It's beyond my expectations, you know? And of course not everybody is going to get the same, you know, kind of future. I mean, we're reading the book of Job at Mass every day. It's like,
Yeah.
She's one of those lucky ones. She rarely has a bad hour, let alone a bad day.
Wow.
It's great. And it's been really fun to watch the two sisters play together now. Mm-hmm. They really love to play together again and make up all these imaginary games. And, yeah.
That's great. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing this story. Did you have anything else that, just to kind of round out the conversation about the title of Mary and just, you know, maybe even if how she's been influencing your own personal life or anything like that. Anything else you'd like to share with our audience?
Well, I would, I don't know how much time we have. Cause I forget which saint it was there, but by the grace of the Virgin Mary, go I. So in 1999, my husband's heart condition worsened to the point of death. Mm. And we still had two preschoolers at home.
Mm.
And my oldest was in eighth grade. And those last months, November to February, when he was hoping and waiting for a heart transplant and a lung transplant, because the heart condition he had had destroyed his lungs, and we did not find a donor, we're tough.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember hearing, like when the first times I went to a meditation by a priest of Opus Dei when I was in high school,
mm-hmm.
that you go to the foot of the cross with these things, and you go next to Our Lady,
mm-hmm.
and you just put them at her feet at the foot of the cross. And you say, here am I with you,
mm-hmm.
you know, and no words need it. I mean, that's an incredible kind of suffering I don't wish on anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And she does like share her heart with us. She gives us her heart, right? It's the same heart she loves her son with. And there she's watching her son die. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, give me the strength to do something difficult. Yeah, not as difficult as yours, but in the same category, maybe. And she did. I didn't feel great, but I felt like I was doing what I was supposed to be doing. I think that's a great consolation to know that when you go to Our Lady, when you can't do more,
mm-hmm.
that's good enough.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing happened to me. With my fourth pregnancy, I was rushed to the hospital in a pool of blood, and they put me under for an emergency cesarean, and I didn't know what was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I started seeing spots and stars and everything. I said to the nurse, what's going on? And she said, oh, honey, you're just scared. I went, oh, I know what to do about scared. And I just started saying Hail Marys.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how much later, many hours later, because they had to do an enormous surgery on me, I woke up with a baby in my arms. You know, but I felt so peaceful because I knew what to do.
Mm-hmm.
I knew what to do. I go to my mother. That's my job right now.
Mm.
That's my job. And I could go on and on. Whenever I have been, there are many other situations, you know, but I think you get the idea. Some of them really dire health situations for people I love. It's that my job right now is to pray. My job is to pray. I cannot do what the doctors are doing. I cannot, you know, go where they're going, but I can pray. That's my job, right? And that's her job. And she does it so well. So why not go to the master, right? And entrust it to her. And it's always worked. Not that I got necessarily a result. Like, just I told you, I never asked for Maddie's cure.
Right.
But as it started coming along, I just got everybody to say, you know, I think we're going to get a cure. I think we're going to have this huge surgery. It's life-threatening surgery. Please help me pray. But if you told me, but sometimes the answer is like, my husband is going to die. And yet, after so many years, 25 years it's been this year, we have 10 grandchildren so far. And everything he did has produced great fruit. Right? And so she knew. She knew.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. What a beautiful, I mean, just a beautiful example and a reminder to continue. You know, you didn't give up on Our Lady either. You continued to pray to her, and she, even though in the sense of you, you know, not specifically asking for a cure for your granddaughter, she knew what you needed. You know, she knew what your family needed, because I mean, that could be for a number of reasons, but I, you know, from what I'm hearing, it's because through that continued relationship with her, like she knows your needs, like just like her son knows our needs perfectly. If we let her in and tell her what, you know, ask for her intercession on things too, then she can, you know, intercede for us to her son. And I don't know, it's just, it's very powerful what your life experiences too. It's not just your granddaughter, it's with your husband, it's all these things. And those are beautiful examples that we can all learn from. So thank you. Thank you so much.
Oh, I'm happy to share it, because certainly these ideas are not my original ideas, any of them. But you know, I've had a good sense. It's just like so many of my friends that I grew up with, right? And here I am with 6 kids, 10 grandchildren, and it's like, you know, I was just trusting in the wisdom of the church. I had no idea it would be such a great idea.
Right. The church is onto something, wouldn't you?
I tell you, it's and even my husband was. It's just great in so many ways. He's like, you know, who am I compared to 2,000 years of wisdom, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Wow.
That's so true.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing this beautiful story about your granddaughter, and even about your life too, and how Mary, Mother of First Love, has interceded for you, and how you've found a strong devotion to her. And we just
always will.
Yeah. And the prayer card is on the website. It's we have many opportunities, and we have the prayer circle on the website as well. So if you find that there's other intentions that you'd like to offer for those around the United States to pray for, you can do that too. And we're so grateful for your story. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. Yes, I write to you all in California about once every 6 months for 25 more prayer cards.
Okay. Yes. Send them your way. We got it.
Well, yeah. I mean, I run out about every 6 months. So I just it's so perfect. Mm-hmm. I just can't believe I'm lucky enough to be living what I'm living, because I think this devotion will change the face of the United States and all the Americas. It has before. Going to Our Lady has made such a huge difference in the lives. Guadalupe is just one example, but here's another one that's for the 21st century. That's what I think.
Yeah, I love it. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on the show.
My honor. Thank you, Mary Grace.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Ferris Love Podcast. In 2024, we want to reach as many people as possible. You can help by sharing this episode with a friend, subscribing to the podcast, or leaving a review. To learn more, visit us at ferrislovshrine.org.